It's Monday, July 13th. Earnings season has started, and for banks, the stakes are high.
So the question isn't really whether earnings will be bad, they will, but whether they'll be bad enough to rule out future dividends.
Our reporter will give us a reality check, including what's working in the bank's favor. Plus, we're reporting a $20 billion deal is in the works between two semiconductor giants. And the bumpy skies may not be calming down anytime soon as the nation's airlines deal with more uncertainty.
I think you are going to see air travel sort of come to a screeching halt of sorts in the fall. And then it's really just a question of how long is it going to take to recover?
Our aviation columnist talks about airlines, airfares, and airports. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. We begin in Florida, where the new coronavirus infections topped 15,000 cases on Saturday. It's the largest one-day increase in any state since the start of the pandemic. While the Sun Belt has been hit hard, states to the west, including Montana and Nevada, have also reported a surge. Daily infections in the U.S. surpassed 60,000 for a third consecutive day on Saturday, after reaching a record of more than 66,000 cases the previous day. Meantime, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos supports President Trump's push to reopen schools. She appeared on Fox News on Sunday.
We know that for kids getting back to school and getting back to learning, getting back with their peers, with their teachers, is really imperative. And fully operational and fully functioning means that kids can be back there. And if for families that need their kids in school in person 5 days a week, that has to be an option.
There's now a public debate as experts and a number of politicians are asking the Trump administration not to rush the reopening of schools amid health concerns. We are reporting disagreements between leaders at the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department slowed the start of a lending program aimed at helping small and mid-sized businesses. At issue, the term of the loans under the $600 billion Main Street Lending Program. The Fed favored easier terms. The Treasury preferred a more conservative approach. That's according to government officials. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the back and forth was part of the process and not because of disagreements. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said in June that the two worked closely together and have been willing to learn from the experience. From cars to washing machines, chips are becoming a big part of new products and corporate strategy. You may never have heard of Analog Devices and Maxim Integrated Products, but these two companies are discussing a $20 billion deal. More on our reporting from markets editor Quinton Webb.
Well, here's something you don't see so much of in 2020, and that is a big merger scoop. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that two major semiconductor companies are on the cusp of getting together. A company called Analog Devices is close to a deal to buy smaller rival Maxim Integrated for the equivalent of about $20 billion in stock. Now, we should stress that this, at the time of recording, is not a done deal. There is no official announcement. Neither company has said anything. And of course, deals like this invite all kinds of regulatory scrutiny from regulators in the US, in China, in the European Union, and so on. But it is interesting. We're in a very bad year, as you might expect, for global mergers and acquisitions. The M&A business volumes are down about 50% year to date. And this is perhaps an interesting sign of animal spirits returning, albeit tentatively. This deal, if concluded, would be, on Dealogic's numbers, the biggest deal so far in the US this year.
It's the start of earnings season. This week, we're hearing from big names, including Pepsi, Delta Airlines, and Domino's Pizza. But there will be a lot of attention on big banks as they come under pressure for their loans, even as some could profit from their investment banking. The Wall Street Journal's Telus Demos covers markets and securities.
Because of COVID-19, the Federal Reserve has told banks to limit their quarterly payouts to shareholders based on how much they've been earning. Banks were already in the earnings hole after the first quarter, when they recorded billions in losses as reserves against potential bad loans to consumers and businesses. This quarter, knowing even more about the economic impact of COVID-19 than they did then, they're likely to set aside billions more. They'll have some things working in their favor, like big revenue for trading desks, but they're also facing super low interest rates that squeeze margins on the loans they do make. So the question isn't really whether earnings will be bad, they will, but whether they'll be bad enough to rule out future dividends. And that's something that will keep shareholders' eyes wide open when JP Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo kick off the reporting season on Tuesday.
Just ahead, how airlines and airports are coping during the COVID-19 crisis and how it could impact you. For many families, a big summer vacation has been canceled, and flying during the pandemic can be a pain. This is a big impact on the economy. According to a trade group, commercial aviation as a whole employs about 10 million people. Joining us now is columnist Scott McCartney. Scott, you know I used to cover the airline, so it's good to have you here this morning.
It's great to be with you, Mark.
Scott, I want to start with your recent exclusive interview with United Airlines' new CEO, Scott Kirby. Not too long after, United released information that it is facing the possibility of furloughing more than 30,000 employees. If I look at the numbers, that's because the demand doesn't seem to be there.
Well, the numbers aren't there for demand. The numbers just aren't there for travel right now. And so that is the problem they're facing. The 36,000 that they warned could be furloughed, that number is high. That is an absolute worst case scenario. You know, under the law, they have to give people 60 days notice of the possibility of furlough. And so they just included everything. That's not to say that after Labor Day, there won't be massive furloughs. Or actually, because of the CARES Act, it'll come at the end of September. So airlines, to get the CARES Act money, they had to agree to keep people on the payroll till September 30th. But then after that, in October, there's absolutely no business travel. There probably won't be much leisure demand at all. I mean, we're seeing a little bit of a summer, just so much pent-up frustration and demand that people are going, visiting friends and relatives or going to Vegas or whatever for summer travel, but that's really going to tail off in October. And I think you are going to see air travel sort of come to a screeching halt of sorts in the fall. And then it's really just a question of how long is it going to take to recover?
Right. We talked about United, but basically this is an issue that's facing all of the carriers right now. Who are the executives talking to make their decisions? Is this based strictly off of numbers, or are some people just trying some kind of novel approach in this very uncertain time?
The interesting thing about numbers is there's absolutely no history on this. Air travel demand follows patterns typically, and airlines can tell you with their yield management systems, they can tell you what the demand is for the 2 p.m. flight to Des Moines on the third Tuesday of January. And it wouldn't be much, but they can tell you what it would be. And in this case, the history does not apply. This is completely unprecedented. So everybody can look at their numbers, but they're going to come to different conclusions. And we're seeing that. And it's really quite fascinating, seeing that in very different strategies of different airlines. United, as we talked about, has really been very conservative. American, on the other hand, has just been aggressive. And Delta, interestingly, they have pursued a strategy like Southwest, like JetBlue, of blocking the middle seat, limiting capacity to 65% of their regular seat capacity. And essentially, they're marketing to the people who aren't flying, who they're trying to build confidence, come back, we'll take care of you, don't worry about it. And they think that's the strategy. They really don't care much about people traveling during the pandemic on really cheap fares. They're playing the long game and trying to position themselves to be preferred carrier in the rebound.
Let's switch gears and talk about airports for a moment. Many airports are really quiet. But where you live in Dallas-Fort Worth, there's even a line sometimes to get a sandwich. Why is it that busy in Dallas?
Yeah, it really is. It's really quite amazing. Several things are going on, but you can be at DFW Airport now in late afternoon when American has one of its major banks of flights. And there will be lines at restaurants. Only about 60% of them or so are open. The airport says there are times during the day in July when 100% of their gates will be utilized. And in fact, In the domestic terminals, there is a real concern that there are just so many people, you can't social distance in the terminal. And so it really is quite busy. American, as I mentioned, has been very aggressive with its capacity, and there are people flying, and they're finding that their choice is flying American. But the other thing that's going on is sort of the return to the mid-continent hub. There's just not enough traffic now, and I think this is going to continue for a long time, to have point-to-point service, to have long nonstop flights. For the last two decades, airlines have sort of gotten away from stopping in the middle of the country and flying coast to coast between, you know, Hartford and Oakland, or, you know, just say the secondary cities. Now you're going to have to go through a hub. So the reemergence of the hub is going to be a big issue for travelers going forward, because, you know, the travelers don't necessarily like it. There's a lot of inconvenience. It also increases the chances of delays and lost bags and getting stranded. And, you know, if there's a storm at the hub, it's chaos. And so it is very disruptive to travel.
And finally, looking ahead, any indication about the cost of air travel in the future?
I think it's very hard to predict, because it's hard to know what kind of supply of seats will be out there. You know, if we see a massive pullback by airlines in October and November, they're not going to ramp up much. They'll do some for Thanksgiving, some for Christmas, New Year's travel periods, but it may be sort of limited into how much they can do or how much they really want to do. And, you know, it's not a business where you can sort of turn it on for a week or two and then turn it off. You make long-term decisions about grounding airplanes, furloughing workers, things like that. So I would expect to see, you know, for that reason, if there is any kind of demand for holiday travel, prices may be high. And if you're hell-bent on traveling, it's probably a good idea to book early and see if you can get a cheap price, and then have it. If you book now, you can, there aren't change fees. You can at least get a voucher, and if the flight ends up getting canceled, perhaps get a refund. So it's going to be a tough situation.
Scott McCartney, safe travels as always. Great to have you here.
Good to be with you.
And that's what's news for this Monday. We're back tonight with an update. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.